Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 543, titled Hell and High Water, Cartoon Gate and the Dubai Ports Controversy. This is being recorded on March 5th of the year 2006. At the end of this side and of Side 2, time permitting, I'm going to give you a bunch of websites and other information that will help to flesh out your understanding. In particular, the Dave Emery broadcast experience, to coin a term, is now supplemented with a vast amount, growing amount of information on the web. Listeners are encouraged to utilize that in order to gain some depth on the subject material of these broadcasts. Now, again, the title, Hell and High Water, Cartoon Gate and the Dubai Port Scandal, refers to the controversy, the worldwide and now increasingly violent controversy that erupted from a Danish newspaper's publication of some cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. There's a lot more going on with that than what most people are aware of. We'll talk about that later. And we're also going to be talking about the controversy concerning allowing a United Arab Emirates / Dubai company to begin managing some American ports. Both issues, both Cartoon Gate, so to speak, and the Dubai situation in many ways highlight the cluelessness of an awful lot of people in this country and to a certain extent elsewhere about what's really going on. We're going to be talking about these, and I want to stress to people that they should be very, very careful to distinguish between, first of all, Islam and Islamofascism, as I call it. And also, one should be very, very careful not to become too emotionally engaged with this, because increasingly, I'm seeing people going off the deep end and on both sides of the debate vis-a-vis the Dubai ports controversy and Cartoon Gate. I'm seeing some seriously irrational mental behavior on both sides of both issues. So that brief caveat. One of the things to understand against the background of both, too, is the fact that we are looking at a political and economic phenomenon more than a cultural one. In the description for the record 543, I will contain a longer excerpt. Well, actually, probably won't have to do that. This will do. This is from the Sunday Times, the London Times, of February 12, 2006. It's an op-ed piece. It says, "Focus. We don't do God, we do Palestine and Iraq." It reads in part, "It looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and flies like a duck, and yet it insists that it is not a duck. This is the image that comes to mind when watching those anti-cartoon marches in Western capitals, including London, in the name of Islam. Isn't Islam supposed to be a religion? Shouldn't it be concerned with the broader issues of human existence rather than with a set of cartoons, a Dutch television documentary, the head covers of French schoolgirls, or a novel by a British Indian author? Today, the visible Islam, the loudest Islam, is a political movement masquerading as a religion. Many mosques in this country have been transformed into political clubs where Kashmir, Iraq, and Palestine and the, quote, misdeeds of Anglo-Saxon imperialism, unquote, have replaced issues of religious faith as the principal theme." Well, indeed, I think that's well said. That's important, and it's true. One of the things that is looming large against the background of both controversies as well is globalization. And increasingly, as capital flows to some of the more reactionary Middle Eastern oil potentates, and in turn as they begin reinvesting that capital in Western economies, it is both highlighting and exacerbating the conflict between certain cultural and political values and some economic considerations that, I don't see a whole lot of possibility for a satisfactory resolution. We will see what happens. But again, as one evaluates Cartoon Gate and the Dubai port controversy, bear in mind globalization, the fact that the globalization of the economy is increasingly going to be leading to things like the Dubai port scandal, and also that what one is really seeing in the context of the outrage in the Muslim world over the cartoons is not a religious but a political consideration. And in the second half of the show, we're going to take a look at Cartoon Gate and what that was really all about and how it really is not nearly as simple a situation as has been made out. Now, in the context of globalization and the profound and growing business relationships between people in the United States and some of the Middle Eastern oil kingdoms, relationships exemplified, by the way, in the Bush family's business dealings, one wants to note the conflict between the very real considerations of national security and the basic business of staying alive and some of the dictates of globalization. With regard to the Dubai ports controversy, a very interesting consideration was highlighted by Molly Ivins in a column that she had in the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, March 2nd of 2006. Dateline Austin, Texas, this is headlined, "A Flood of Business Exemptions." And it points out that one of the legal dictates that basically precipitated or led to the Dubai ports world takeover of operations in American ports was the fact that a great deal of secrecy is mandated by some of the globalization statutes that have permitted a growth of relationships like the Dubai Ports World relationship with American capital interests. And the conflict between the dictates of globalization and issues of national security are profound. One of the reasons that I took the time that I did to write descriptions for a number of old anti-fascist books is that the relationships between German, American, and Japanese industrialists are not altogether dissimilar to the types of relationships that exist between Middle Eastern oil kingdoms and some very powerful elements of the American elite as well. And once again, there is a fundamental conflict between the dictates of justice and fair national interest and international globalized economics. And that conflict is highlighted here by Molly Ivins. The first two paragraphs of her column read, "With the Bush administration, it's important to have in mind the old carnival con game, keep your eye on the shell with the P under it. Among the many curious aspects of the administration's approval of the Dubai Ports World takeover of operations at six major ports and as many as 21 is this exemption from normally routine restrictions. The agreement does not require DP World to keep copies of its business records on U.S. soil, which would place them within the jurisdiction of American courts. Nor does it require the company to designate an American citizen to accommodate requests by the government." So what's that about? Again, this agreement does not require, as Molly Ivins has written, DP World to keep copies of its business records on U.S. soil, which would place them within the jurisdiction of American courts. Nor does it require the company to designate an American citizen to accommodate requests by the government. Well, obviously, this does nothing to make it possible to see to it that nukes, CBW weapons, or whatever, come into the United States through these ports. And there's every reason to be alarmed at Dubai running ports, despite the assurances from the Bush administration and the shrill notes of protest coming from parts of the Arab and Muslim world. More about the secrecy involved here. This from another op-ed column from the San Francisco Chronicle. This from Friday, February 24th of 2006. E.J. Dion of the Washington Post writes as follows in a column called "Sea Change in Bush Credibility." "Most Americans had no idea that our government's process of approving foreign takeovers of American companies through the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States was entirely secret. When Representative John Sweeney, Republican of New York, asked Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff about the Dubai ports deal at a hearing on February 15th, Chertoff declined to answer because the committee's work was, quote, classified, unquote. Treasury Secretary John Snow told another congressional committee that he was not permitted to discuss specific transactions considered by the Foreign Investment Panel. Well, again, this type of secrecy, part of the stricture, part of the legal underwriting of globalized trade treaties is something that is obviously in a fundamental state of contradiction with any reasonable concept of national security. One of the many things that I find very depressing about the current political landscape is that the political debate in the United States, at least, seems to be bifurcated into people who are completely hysterical in their outlook towards Arabs and Muslims. And then on the other side, one has the PC crowd who are completely unmindful of the fact that there is a very, very real threat. And in their misguided PC ideology, they are quite literally running interference for fascist Islamic elements that are, at an economic level, very much tied in not only to the Bush administration at a superficial level, but to the underground Reich. And there is a very real reason to be concerned about the Dubai ports deal. Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, February 8th of 2006, has the following article by Jonathan Weissman from the Washington Post. Coast Guard issued warning on Dubai firm. It reads in part as follows. The U.S. Coast Guard, in charge of reviewing security at ports operated by a Dubai maritime company, warned the Bush administration that it could not rule out that the company's assets could be used for terrorist operations, according to a document released Monday by a Senate committee. Dubai Ports World plans to complete its takeover of London-based Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation, P&O, on Thursday, assuming ownership of operations at six major U.S. ports, even as it pledges to hold off on asserting control while the Bush administration reviews the national security implications of the deal. The White House has strongly argued that a preliminary review showed that the sale would pose no threat to national security. But in a December 13th intelligence assessment of the company and its owners in the United Arab Emirates, the Coast Guard warned, quote, "There are many intelligence gaps concerning the potential for DPW or P&O assets to support terrorist operations that preclude the completion of a thorough threat assessment of the merger." Again, quoting from the Coast Guard report, "The breadth of the intelligence gaps also infer potential unknown threats against a large number of potential vulnerabilities," says the document, released by the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. So again, the Coast Guard believes that there is a very real reason to be concerned. As we're going to see, I think there is abundant reason to believe the Coast Guard. We're going to take a look at some of the funkier aspects of Dubai. We should note in this regard that apologists for Dubai and for P&O have basically pointed out that it will still be U.S. authorities overseeing port security. But in the Financial Times of London, a point was made that has largely escaped a lot of people's notice. This is from the Financial Times of Thursday, February 23rd of 2006. This article itself is something of an apologist article for the Dubai, for P&O, but it contains some very interesting information if one reads carefully. The article is by Andrew Ward, Stephanie Kirschgeissner, and Edward Alden. It's headlined, "Calmer Voices Drowned Out by Rhetoric on Security Threat." And although this basically sort of poo-poos the notion that there is a threat here, I would take very close note of the following. P&O's role is to manage dockside terminals, usually alongside rival operators such as Maersk. This gives the company control over the containers that pass through its facilities, but all cargo is subject to security checks by the U.S. Coast Guard and Customs. Well, that may be the case, but the fact of the matter is that, to put it mildly, our security arrangements are less than complete. If I had a lot of confidence in this country's security apparatus, I might have a different attitude towards this deal, but I don't. And in light of September 11th, with people like Michael Chertoff in charge of the Department of Homeland Security, a person who represented Dr. Magdi El-Amir, an apparent Al-Qaeda financier, Michael Chertoff also having helped a Deep Six Operation Green Quest, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. The chief financial officer of the Department of Homeland Security is David Norquist, younger brother of Grover Norquist, not only one of the linchpins of the Republican right, but a man who has functioned as a lobbyist for some of the most heinous Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Taqwa, and Al-Qaeda-related elements. So with elements like that in positions of power in the United States, I think that as many bases need to be reasonably covered as can be reasonably covered, and simply allowing Dubai to run ports in light of the fact that they will have control over the contents of cargo is a mistake. We're going to take a look now at some indications that Dubai is not just the benign, quote, ally, unquote, in the war on terrorism that we are told it is. Yet another op-ed column from the San Francisco Chronicle, this from Wednesday, March 1st of 2006. This is a column by Robert Scheer called Dubious Dubai Deal. And skipping down of Dubai, yeah, I know, to be the least bit queasy about turning over our ports to guys who supported the Taliban when that bunch of religious maniacs were harboring bin Laden is, as the Bush apologists tell us, just xenophobic. Dubai was not alone. Saudi Arabia and Pakistan did the same, and they are now trusted allies. These are crazy times, and there are some unnerving oddities in Bush's foreign policy. Yes, indeed, and amen to that. Another aspect of Dubai and its ports situation was highlighted by Peter Dale Scott, the brilliant Berkeley professor, in an article on his website. This will be fully footnoted in the description to this program when it's up. This is a section called Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, the Northern Alliance, and Drug Trafficking. We read the following, skipping down. This is talking about the Al-Qaeda-related heroin trafficking that comes out of Afghanistan and that provides some of the income for Al-Qaeda and other Islamo-fascist terrorists. And again, some of these drug trafficking operations overlap with intelligence elements in this country. Indeed, they helped to finance the Afghan Mujahideen war against the Soviets. As we've looked at in some of our conversations with the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, at least some of this heroin traffic appears to have been coming into little old Huffman Aviation and the area around Naples and Venice, Florida, where Wally Hilliard, Rudy Deckers, Mohammed Atta and company were holding forth. In this Peter Dale Scott article, we read of the Al-Qaeda-related heroin traffic. Cargo planes fly twice a week between the southern Afghan city of Kandahar and Dubai, one of the United Arab Emirates. According to the Boston Globe of September 26th of 01, these planes fly south with drugs. The Financial Times of September 24th of 01 reported a claim, quote, that at least up until 6 months ago, two flights a week were traveling from Dubai to Kandahar, Mr. bin Laden's Afghan base, with boxes of dollar bills. So Dubai is an area that has proved very fertile for some of the Al-Qaeda-related elements in which they could operate. Still more about Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and bin Laden. By the way, Daniel Hopsicker has a great article about this on his website. This is from Elizabeth White of the Associated Press. It's datelined. This is, by the way, from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, February 24th of 2006. This is by Elizabeth White of the AP. It's datelined Washington and headlined, Report Links Country and Bin Laden. The United States raised concerns with the United Arab Emirates 7 years ago about possible ties between officials in that country and Osama bin Laden, according to a section of the September 11th Commission's report that details a possible missed opportunity to kill the Al-Qaeda leader. The Commission's report, released last year, also raised concerns UAE officials were directly associating with bin Laden as recently as 1999. The report states U.S. intelligence believed that bin Laden was visiting an area in the Afghan desert in February of 1999 near a hunting camp used by UAE officials and that the U.S. military planned a missile strike. Intelligence from local tribal sources indicated, quote, bin Laden regularly went from his adjacent camp to the larger camp where he visited the Emiratis, unquote, the report said. The missile attack was never launched and bin Laden moved on, the report said. A month later, top White House counterterrorism official Richard Clark, quote, called a UAE official to express his concerns about possible associations between Emirati officials and bin Laden, unquote, the report said. At a hearing of the Senate Armed Services Committee on Thursday, Senator Carl Levin, the ranking Democrat, asked Deputy Treasury Secretary Robert Kimmett if he was aware of the 9/11 Commission's assertion that the United Arab Emirates represents, quote, a persistent counterterrorism problem for the United States, unquote. Kimmett replied that administration figures involved in the decision to approve the deal, quote, looked very carefully, unquote, at information from the intelligence community. Quote, Just raise your hand if anybody talked to the 9/11 Commission, unquote, Levin told the administration representatives at the witness table. Nobody raised a hand. So again, in addition to Dubai being one of the ports of call for the al-Qaeda-related heroin traffic on its way to, among other places, the United States, there are documented connections between the leaders of the United Arab Emirates and the al-Qaeda and bin Laden. Still more about Dubai and some of its dubious connections, teehee. This is from the New York Times of Wednesday, February 22nd of the year 2006. A column by Maureen Dow, Dateline Washington, GOP to W, you're nuts. Skipping down, we read, maybe it's corporate racial profiling, but I don't want foreign companies, particularly ones with links to 9/11, running American ports. What kind of empire are we if we have to outsource our coastline to a group of sheiks who don't recognize Israel in a country where money was laundered for the 9/11 attacks? And that let A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani nuclear scientist, smuggle nuclear components through its port to Libya, North Korea, and Iran. It's mind-boggling that President Bush ever agreed to let an alliance of seven emirs be in charge of six of our ports. Though, as usual, Incurious George didn't even know about it until after the fact. Neither did Rummy, even though he heads one of the agencies that green-lighted the deal. And again, as we looked at the beginning of the broadcast, note the profound secrecy that would obtain with regard to Dubai running these ports. And again, note that, first of all, Dubai was one of the major ports of call for the al-Qaeda-related Afghan heroin traffic, some of which, at least, was coming into the United States in the areas around Huffman Aviation that Daniel Hopsicker has reported on. Note, again, that the Coast Guard did not feel this was a particularly good idea. Note also that there are documented links between leaders of the United Arab Emirates and bin Laden, that in fact a missile attack that might have taken bin Laden out was to a certain extent precluded by the presence of the emir of the United Arab Emirates. And as indicated there in the Maureen Dowd column, do not overlook the fact that Dubai was one of the major ports of call for the A.Q. Khan nuclear smuggling ring. We're going to review an item that we looked at in For the Record program number 450. This is from an article, an op-ed column called Nukes Are Us by Gary Milholland and Kelly Motz from the New York Times of March 4th of 2004. Speaking of the A.Q. Khan network, we read, why ship through Dubai? Because it may be the easiest place in the world to mask the real destination of cargo. Consider how the Malaysian government is making the case for the innocence of its manufacturing company. Quote, no document was traced that proved, unquote, the company, again quoting, delivered or exported the said components to Libya, according to the country's Inspector General of Police. The real destination, he said, quote, was outside the knowledge of the producer. One can be certain that if the Khan ring's European suppliers are ever tracked down, they will offer a similar explanation. Dubai provides companies and governments a vital asset, automatic deniability. Its customs agency even brags that its policy on re-exporting, quote, enables traders to transit their shipments through Dubai without any hassles, unquote. Next to Dubai's main port is the Jebel Ali Free Trade Zone, a haven for freewheeling international companies. Our organization has documented 264 firms from Iran and 44 from rogue regimes like Syria and North Korea. With the laxity of the Emirates' laws, there is simply no way to know how many weapons components have passed through. So again, note that Dubai actually brags of the fact that their trade regulations are such that facilitates the masking of cargo in its true destination. Again, not something that inspires a great deal of confidence under the circumstances. One of the things that looms large against the controversy of the Dubai ports controversy is the whole issue of globalization. Now, globalization is not a new phenomenon. It really began in earnest right after World War I. It's one of the things that led to the Second World War with the investment of profound amounts of American capital in Japanese and German strategic heavy industry. It was what enabled those countries to surge all over Asia and Europe. And again, the conflicts between globalization and not only national security, but frankly, just basic common sense are profound. Last two articles on this subject before we take a break to go over to side two. From the Financial Times of Thursday, February 23rd of 2006, this is an article by Stephanie Kirschgesner and Holly Yeager and Robert Wright. Washington insiders were left to guess yesterday whether the White House or some of the most prominent lawmakers in Congress, including top Republicans in the House and Senate, would be the first to compromise on the issue after President George W. Bush warned on Tuesday that he would veto any legislative effort to block the deal. And again, this is the worry on the part of the administration is that it will block foreign investors. It'll be bad for trade. Similar arguments were raised, and successfully so, against the attempts to interdict the terrorist money flow, that it would have a bad effect on international business. And note again that with the tremendous flow of capital from the Western countries and places like China as well to the Middle Eastern oil-producing kingdoms, that wealth is in turn being reinvested. So the pressure to basically forego security in the interests of globalization is profound. From the Financial Times of Thursday, March 2nd of 2006, an article by William Wallace in Cairo, "Ports Backlash Makes Arab Investors Wary." Skipping down, David Hammond, NUSACC's president, said the DP World saga had intervened just as Arab interest in the U.S. market was picking up again, and students and businessmen, deterred by visa restrictions against Arab nationals after the 2001 attacks on Washington and New York, had begun returning in greater numbers. U.S. companies in the region are also worried they may be penalized at a time that Arab states, flush with petrodollars, have initiated huge infrastructure projects. A group of U.S. businesses from the Gulf took out an advertisement in the Capitol Hill newspaper roll call this week expressing solidarity with DP World. So again, the conflicts between nationalist interest and globalization, not unlike the conflicts that led many powerful American financiers and industrialists to interdict attempts at basically stopping Japan and Germany because they were investment partners with Japan and Germany in World War II. And as something of a bridge to the subject material inside, too, from the Chronicle of Friday, February 24th of 2006, article by Deepti Hajela, "Arabs and Muslims Sense Bigotry in Port Dispute." We're going to deal with this in at greater length inside, too. But again, note the many links between Dubai and United Arab Emirates and bin Laden through the heroin traffic, through the note their role in the AQ Khan network, note their lax regulations, their support for the Taliban, and so forth. And again, bear in mind that the pressures of globalization are working against the interests of any reasonable national security or even sanity, frankly, under the circumstances. In order to flesh out your understanding, check out the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. There are written article-length descriptions of the For the Record shows, a number of great books online with descriptions and introductions. There are links to two websites maintained by WFMU, the heroic WFMU that has the entire For the Record series available online. And there are numerous other websites as well with the documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry. There's a search function. There's a blog sphere. Again, a vast and growing amount of printed information and supplemental audio information available on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and linked websites. And last but certainly not least, there is a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing, and if you don't like what you see, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 543, Hell and High Water, the Cartoon Gate and the Dubai Ports Controversy. This is being recorded on March 5th of 2006. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.